Let's see how well you know your Big Red history.
Bring it.
Who was Cornell's 8th president?
Dale Raymond Corson.
I'm sorry, that's incorrect. Cornell's 7th president was, in fact, James A. Perkins. Comprehension skills, subpar.
Interviewing skills, subpar.
What are you writing? Can't even give Cornell your full attention.
On the contrary, I'm helping Cornell by evaluating their interviewers.
Nobody wants that to happen.
Well, when they get my evaluation, we'll see if they're interested.
Gotham Sports Network presents NYG Weekly.
NYG Weekly, Ethan Weiss here with you again. Before we get into everything, you know what we got to do. We got to take care of the housekeeping. First things first, you can follow us on Twitter. Follow me at EthanGSN. Follow Weiss at NYG Daily. Follow the blog at GothamSN. Subscribe. We're everywhere. iTunes, Audioboom, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, Spotify. Subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe. Rate us 5 stars. Leave us a kind review. As I'm sure you're all aware, very special guest for this episode, Dan Duggan. He was digging.
The great Dan Duggan.
He was digging, then he was Duggan, and then he was Dugan, according to Pat McAfee. Follow him on Twitter at dduggan21. Subscribe to The Athletic. Read his very good journalism. Dan, what's going on?
Not much. Yeah, that Pat McAfee shout-out was funny, man. I spent my whole life fighting being called Dugan, and then I heard that. Like, that's kind of cool. Sounds kind of good.
Now you got to roll with Dugan. It. Yeah. Well, crazy day for you. Putting out that piece, I think that's where we want to start and talk about it before we get into some more general organizational questions. So I've got some questions. Weiss has got some questions. The listeners got some questions. Weiss, I'll let you start. Actually, Dan, why don't you, for those who haven't read, and if you want to give yourself a little plug on The Athletic, just give a quick overall summary of the piece and what you spoke about and what you were investigating.
Yeah, so, I mean, it was a long piece. Took a long time to work on, took a long time to write. The premise was really just kind of like, so the Giants won a Super Bowl 10 years ago, and now they're, you know, like literally the worst team in the NFL the last five years, them and the Jets. I mean, it's not a stretch to say that the record says that. So it's just like, how do you get from there to here in you know, a relatively short period of time? That was kind of what I set out for. I didn't really know which direction it would take me. But there has been this like underlying family dynamic that I think a lot of fans have started to pick up on. I mean, it's always something I've sort of been cognizant of, but it's always kind of in the background. And then it just felt like as I was doing some reporting on this and research and stuff, I was like, you know, that topic hasn't been explored that much. So let me see if I can really dive into that. That's how it kind of, you know, morphed into that rather than trying to do like this grand, you know, breakdown of every single thing that went wrong in the last 10 years, because that piece would be 10 times as long as the one I wrote, which again was already very long. So
yeah.
I kind of try to focus in on the family dynamics, which are, you know, like a Succession type vibe or Game of Thrones. You can make all this. I mean, there's a lot of that going on there.
Yeah, very Succession-like. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's interesting. I think that's the stuff people, you know, like you always get the people like, oh, right, but the X's and O's, but like we're human beings and this stuff is interesting. You know, so when a you know, story like this is out there, it's you know, I felt like it was worth pursuing. And so, yeah, so I just kind of just tried to basically from George Young to today, really just weave through as much of the family dynamics. I think it's really fascinating. This franchise has won, you know, aside from the Patriots, the most Super Bowls in the last 35 years in the entire league. And yet they've had other stretches, you know, obviously this recent one, then you go back to the 70s of just being like the worst franchise. So it's been a crazy ride. Obviously, it's, you know, the Maras have owned the organization for almost 100 years. So it's literally their family business. And then you have like a 50-50 ownership, the only one in the league. Like there's just so many interesting dynamics. I was like, let me just fully dive in, not just mention it here and there, touch on it. So that's what today's piece was sort of a product of.
Yeah, and Weiss, before I throw it to you for some questions, Dan, you bring up, like, overall it's very interesting because I think a lot of people talk about it as it is just a fact, and it has been a fact. And not many people took the time to really dive in and sort of figure out why they are the way they are and how we got here in one sort of overarching piece. I mean, we spoke to Ian O'Connor a few weeks ago, and he even mentioned just sort of out of the blue, he was like, oh, yeah, you know, they wanted to make Chris GM back in the day, and Tish nixed it because how do you fire someone who's part of ownership? You can't. You know, that's how you wind up like the Cowboys. And, you know, something like that just sort of gets mentioned in passing, and you sort of – it strikes you a little bit. Like, whoa, like, this is a very interesting dynamic. And Weiss, you even had someone very respected in the NFL writing community mention that it would be – better if John Mara just sort of said, hey, I'm in charge, I'm making the decisions, because at least then, like, you're owning it rather than having this weird aura of being like a puppet master who claims not to be involved when really, you know, you're the one signing off on everything anyway. So, Weiss, I'll throw it to you now.
Yeah, I mean, it was a great piece. I thought Dan really did a good job of sort of explaining what each person's roles are and how it got to today. And I guess my first question, Dan, is, you know, a lot is being made about Chris Mara and his involvement and, you know, the past of him wanting to be GM. And you did a great job articulating that in the piece. But there's a whole nother element to this that I don't think people are really picking up on as much as they should. And that's the whole Tim McDonald thing. And this is something that I've suspected for a while, and you pretty much nailed in your piece when you said he's looking to be the heir apparent, not, you know, in terms, not to Chris Mara and personnel. He's looking to be the heir apparent to John Mara. Eventually he's going to, you know, he's going to be the CEO. Just how close do you think we are to that? And is that a real, real possibility?
Well, I mean, not to be morbid, I mean, John's in good health, but I think that's the timeline. You know what I mean? John didn't take over when Wellington turned a certain age. You know, he took over when Wellington was no longer around to run the team. So listen, you know, hopefully John lives a long and healthy life, and then, you know, they cross that bridge. But I mean, he's in his mid upper 60s, I believe. So, I mean, obviously it has to be a consideration. You know, I know John has a couple of sons. I don't know if it's two or three, but they're not really in the family business at all. Right. Tim is really the only one of that generation who's in it, and he's very much in it. So I think it's very, you know, I think he could kind of go down the Chris Mara path where there's probably going to be a dead end, or he go down the John Mara path where obviously that could be, you know, his livelihood, his life for the next, you know, 40, 50 years. And I think that's just the route he's going to go, because I think he knows the same thing Chris Mara's run into, he would run into. So he's just not going to be the GM. Cause listen, his title is, you know, co-director of player personnel. Like three out of the nine guys the Giants just interviewed for the GM job are, you know, directors of player personnel. I mean, he's on that track. I mean, it's funny, you always hear about like Chris Mara could have been like other teams' GMs. Like, I'm curious how that would have worked. I mean, you're going to be a part owner. Like, what do you have to like disavow from your family? Like, I don't understand how that would work. So, I mean, I think Tim probably, he's obviously in a great situation in life, but he's also kind of boxed in the field he's chosen where he can never get to the pinnacle of it. But the same token, being the president, the face of it, running it in, is not like the worst consolation prize. And then, yeah, maybe he's really grown up in the personnel side where John really did. John was very involved, but he wasn't, you know, scouting and doing all these things that Tim is. Maybe when Tim gets to that point, it becomes more like a Jerry Jones, Stephen Jones operation. I don't know. You know, that's obviously, like I said, maybe 20 years down the road, who knows. But that is certainly, you know, John hasn't come out and said this. No one's going to come out and say this, but that is like definitely the suspicion that he's kind of lining up to take, because someone has to take it over, and there's no other obvious candidates, and he is like the glaring obvious candidate.
Yeah, I think that's sort of Ethan and I have a theory that we think that, because like when you think of John Mara, and if you would have told me the candidates that he would be interviewing, right off the top of my head, I'm like, okay, Scott Pioli, John Dorsey, you know, guys that have been around the league, guys that, you know, are familiar with the Giants. But with this sort of new, I want to say new age of candidates, but a lot of these younger guys, it makes it seem like, you know, Tim McDonald is the young guy in the room. He could have a role in that. Do you think my theory makes sense?
Yeah, it's funny. I hadn't really given it that much thought, as much as I've been thinking and living and breathing this team. That's a pretty good theory. Listen, I will say this. If you're a Giants fan, you want Tim McDonald to be like a superstar. You know what I mean?
Yes.
Ron Wolf rolled into George, like, because he is going to have a lot of power one way or another. He's going to be a very influential voice regardless of what John says. So listen, if it comes out, and I'm sure they wouldn't be shy about sharing this, if it comes to that he was responsible for getting, you know, Joe Shane and Adam Peters and these guys on the list instead of Scott Pioli and John Dorsey, then that would be very encouraging. I think it's a valid theory. Cause I mean, listen, I love Ernie, of course. I never covered him, so like, I feel like I only have to be like unbiased about it, because anytime I talk to him, it's, you know, like memory lane stories. Like, hey, let's talk about the 2004 draft, and he's great on that stuff. But he's also been out of the NFL for, you know, almost two decades. So it's like, didn't need to keep going back to that well to find your next GM. So if it's someone young like Tim, that would make a lot of sense, because, you know, I think his section of the story is, you know, a little shorter. He doesn't have as long a track record. And I think, you know, I'm sure no part of the story they're going to love over at 1925 Giants Drive. But I thought Tim's part was almost complimentary more than anything. I mean, it was just like, he's highly regarded. Like, I mean, I talked to people from other teams. Like, nobody's like, oh, yeah, you know, he's just, you know, some silver spoon guy who, you know, was born on third base and thought he had a triple. Like, he went to Notre Dame, did the grunt work. You know, there's one comment there where I felt like I had to balance it out where someone's like, well, maybe Rose a little faster than if his name, you know, I guess his last name isn't Mara, but he looks like John's son.
He does.
And the thing that's hard with him, though, timeline-wise, is, like, he joined the organization in 2013. So it's like he hasn't been here for, like, any of the good days. At least Chris Mara can hang his hat on all the, you know, the past success. So it's like with Tim, it's like he's rising while everyone, like, is getting fired and thrown out the door. So that part's, a, you know, a little hard to swallow, I think, for some other former colleagues and the like. But, no, I think your point could be valid. I mean, because it's definitely something I want to get to the bottom of. It's like, how did they come up with this list? Because it's so drastically different than what they've done in the past. And, like you said, what you expect.
The only thing that it aligns with who John Mara is that if you look at all these candidates, they all have the majority of their background is scouting. And I think that's what the Giants are sort of looking for in a GM, even dating back to George Young, is that they want somebody with a scouting background, not somebody that, you know, worked with cap or cap space or somebody that worked specifically with, you know, non-draft related stuff like player personnel that wise. But another part of your piece that I really, really liked and I wanted to talk to you about, jumping back to the whole dynamic of this, is you brought up the fact that Chris Mara is involved in the, and you asked John Mara this as well, that he's involved in the interview process. And then also, you know, he's out there, and John Mara said this, scouting, you know, prospects for the NFL draft. The big question that I think all Giants fans have is, how much, like, we understand the dynamic of it, right? Like, how it looks in terms of optics. But, like, how much power does Chris Mara really have? Like, is this,
and
that, like,
the thing? Obviously, you're looking for a smoking gun. And, like, I had heard from different people doing the story, like, oh, he really loved this guy, he really loved that guy. Either I couldn't corroborate it or I checked with other people, and they're like, nah, that was more this guy's pick. It's very hard to assign any one player to any one member of the personnel department. Like, you always have, like, a once in a blue moon, like, there's that old Scott Whitey Walsh who I spoke to this story, who kind of gets a little run because he was the one pounding the table for Brady, and obviously that's become a kind of an urban legend. But, like, those sound great, and it's like a movie scene, but it doesn't really happen that often. Because, I mean, the one thing I tried to break down there was educational even to me, is if you're talking like a first round pick, how many people write reports on him? It's like, it goes through like 10 or 12, you know, people have their fingerprints on it. So it's not as if, like, nine guys think a guy's a second rounder. Chris Mara's like, oh, well, this guy should be the number 10 pick. And that's how, you know, it's a collaborative process. But also, you know, you think about how fine the line is. Because, I mean, you take a guy like Eric Flowers, you go back in that draft and say, well, who was like two picks behind him? Probably some perennial Pro Bowl or Eli Apple, or, you know, there's a million examples of that type of thing. So it's just hard to say while you're going through that process, like, did Chris Mara saying he liked, I'm just going to say Evan Engram, I'm not saying that's a specific example, did that bump him up just enough that when it came time to pick, that's in the back of Jerry's mind? I don't, you know, it's so impossible to quantify. Because one thing I'll say, there isn't any, like, he was, like, berating people, like, I'm the owner, like, that's not his personality. It's just, like, it's this implicit type feeling. Yeah, because, again, like, it's just, I mean, everyone has jobs. Like, you can imagine being in this situation in your job. If, like, some coworker says something, okay, but if your boss says something, and so like, by being a part owner, obviously you're part boss. So that's the thing. Like, again, I wish I had like this smoking gun, or, you know, because it's funny, in the good days stuff got out that, like, he was took credit for Ahmad Bradshaw. Right. It's a funny story because I guess his daughter did that We Are Marshall movie, and there was some connection there, and blah blah blah. But, like, in the good times, stuff like that comes out. The bad times, no, you know. What is that expression? Like, success has, you know, 1,000 fathers, and, you know, failure is an orphan, something like that. And
I'm something like that.
But, you know what I'm saying? That's how it works. Like, no one wants to take credit for, like, you know, DeAndre Baker. Like, oh, I don't know. He just showed up. We don't even know how he got in the building.
Exactly.
So that's kind of how that works. But so, yeah, I can't sit there and say, like, you know, John's big thing. Cause I didn't ask him about undue influence. That was his big thing. Like, undo. Like, yeah, I mean, listen, like, no one's saying he's, like, overpowered, like, you know, arm wrestling Jerry Reese or Dave Gettleman to make a pick. It's just when he puts his word in, it definitely carries more weight than the Southeast area scout. You know, just because, again, we're all humans. Like, that's just how workplaces work. That's how human dynamics work. I will say, though, it was tough because I'm juggling a lot of timelines in the story. I have heard he's way more hands off now. I think again, it's maybe a part of getting older. I mean, he's in his mid 60s as well. He's not beating the bushes on the road. I think he's kind of content to just sort of have, you know, shows up when he wants, kind of puts in his two cents, but isn't, you know, 2008, 2009, 2010 when he's like still like I want to be the GM like that. I think those feelings have, you know, subsided. I think he's kind of, you know, he's got a pretty good life. He's got, you know, horses winning Kentucky Derbies and stuff. Yeah. So he wants to
play the ponies.
Yeah. So he's got a good life. And I think he has stepped back as far as being like super hands on in a personnel role.
Yeah. So I want to ask about Steve Tisch. There are a lot of rumors about Steve Tisch and his overall demeanor and how he is active in the team, not active in the team. What sort of prompted this external search and a very thorough and impressive list of candidates? Who picked those candidates? You know, Weiss and I just espoused our theory, but what is your impression of Steve Tisch and his role in, obviously not day-to-day operations because he's not a football guy, but just in terms of how upset he gets, yeah, big picture, how upset he gets when the team is as bad as it is and for how long has they've been this bad? Like, what does he do?
Yeah. No, I mean, that's, you know, obviously I got into that dynamic as much as I could, but that was harder because the Mariners are there every day. There's a lot more people who can speak to their role. Because, I mean, when you're talking Steve Tisch, like, that's obviously the highest level. He's not really coming in and being around the types of people that are going to talk to me, the area scouts, the guys who work in the front office, the guys in the coaching staff. Like, Steve is really detached. You know, he shows up on kind of game day, kind of comes in, and he goes out. Like, he's not in the building. He's, you know, you see John at training camp, you see him at practice, like, almost every day. You don't ever really see Steve at the facility. So, I mean, my impression of him early on was like, he kind of like would come in when it's a big thing, kind of like huff and puff. And then John would kind of seemingly get his way. I mean, again, this is a lot of speculation, hopefully informative speculation, but like, I'm not privy to that. I won't pretend like I am, like what goes on when those two meet. But I think there's a lot of times where there would be reports or I'd heard stuff where like Steve wanted to blow it up saying 2019. And obviously they did the half measure where, okay, well, let's get rid of Pat, but like, let's give Dave another shot. And there was reports this go around where Steve was one of the ones, you know, again, pushing to blow it up. Maybe John just felt like, well, listen, I kind of have to give in on this. I don't know that John was like fighting to keep Joe Judge, but maybe it was like, this is kind of untenable anyways with the GM search. So yeah, we'll Steve can win this round. I don't know. Like, I don't think they're like have an adversarial relationship, but I just think the dynamic is definitely a little different because, you know, they're 50-50, but John is like 100% involved in the day-to-day and Steve is like 0% involved in the day-to-day. So then when it comes to big decisions, I would imagine Steve probably defers to John a bit more, but again, you just keep losing. I think like Steve Tisch is living out in Hollywood and it's probably not as fun going to parties and saying, oh yeah, I own the Giants. Oh yeah. You see the QB sneak, you know what I mean? That type of stuff. So again, I'm projecting a little bit. I don't know the ins and outs of the Tisch factor. It's hard to nail down because he's just not around that much, but there are definitely signs. I mean, even in, you know, an innocuous thing like announcing Dave Gettleman's retirement, he was like breathing fire in that statement saying,
yeah,
like,
he was.
We're disgusted by what's on the field, or, you know, I'm paraphrasing, it wasn't exactly that strong, but it was you know, an understatement that he's disappointed by the lack of success. That's what I just pulled up. But yes, I mean, it's clear that he's not happy with how things have been going, and I think he's probably throwing his weight around. And it's, I mean, listen, again, they're unique. There's no other 50-50 splits in the league. If it was 51-49, maybe Chris Mayer is the GM. Or, you know, it's 50-50. That's a tough thing to navigate. And again, it all blends into this pot that has led to a kind of a dysfunctional operation overall.
I think what makes it even more tricky is the fact that, you know, it's not like, you know, John Mara and Steve Tisch came together and were like, we're going to buy the Giants. Mm-hmm. They inherited it from their parents. So while Wellington and Steve Tisch's father might have had a great relationship, and Ian O'Connor told us that they did, you know, I don't know if Steve Tisch and John Mara are like buddies and like, you know, go on trips together. So I think that adds another element to it. But in regards to Tisch, I want to ask you one last question, and then we'll move on to the candidates. Is, do you get the sense that he's now more involved in the big picture stuff because of the losing, or is it still like, we don't know?
Yeah, we don't know yet. I mean, because I will say, like, I remember in 2019, he was, oh, I'm going to be more involved. And, like, you didn't see him for 2 years. I mean, obviously, right, some of the pandemic had played a role in that. But, I mean, I'll believe that when I see him. I think he's got a pretty good life out there in L.A. I don't think he's dying to, like, come back here and, you know, sit and watch training camp practices. But you said big picture. So, yeah, I mean, even little things. I mean, again, just when you started, I've been on the beat for 6 years. So I've seen a lot. You kind of store it away. Maybe you're right at the time. Maybe you don't. But, like, it's always been kind of bizarre to me that like they would do high level interviews and Steve would just like meet with the guy on the side like 2 days later. It's like, that's weird. Like, I mean, these are like Joe Judge comes to the building, meets with everybody all day, like what Joe Shane just did today, blows them all away. And then things start moving fast with Rule in Carolina. So basically they know Monday night they're going to hire him, but still like the other 50% of ownership needs to sign off. So Tisch like flies to the airport in Providence, which is closest to where Joe lived at the time with being with the Patriots. And like, unless like Joe made some like offensive remark, like he's getting the job at that point. But like, again, he's got 50% of the say and he's basically just signing off on who's going to be the head coach of the team. Like that to me is crazy when you really step back at the time, like, oh, that's just how they operate. But so now the fact that at least he has been present, involved in all the interviews. I mean, obviously they're virtual. I assume he was at the facility. I guess I don't know that he was in the same room as like John and Chris Mara, but with the in-person round that they announced today, at least he was there. And it's just like, that seems kind of like baseline level stuff. Like, yeah, like I understand you like live somewhere else. You might have some other commitments. Like, I can't imagine, you know, there being a bigger priority for like a couple of days, you know, just to set the, you know, future of your franchise. So I think that's a good sign. But I don't expect that like once these new head coach and GM are in place, you're going to start seeing like Steve Tisch around, like, you know, checking in to make sure everything's operating. I think he'll go back to kind of trust them. That's fine. I mean, that there's plenty of owners who do it that way. I'm always amazed when you find out how many owners like don't even live in the city of the team they own. But it's not that uncommon. These guys are rich. They can get on a private jet and get there pretty quick. So, yeah, I wouldn't expect him to become a bigger presence, but he has been more involved in this process.
So we have a GM search that's sort of winding down, I guess we would call it, right? Or sort of.
I would say, like it's kind of picking up steam to like that's like the finishing kick. Yeah, you know, the first.
We're entering the fourth quarter of it.
There you go.
We're entering the fourth quarter. It's crunch time. Who do you think the favorite is right now? Is there like a front runner, or is this still like we still need a couple more days to see how this in person stuff go?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think coming in the process, there's a lot of buzz about Joe Shane, and so it's kind of easy for me to sit here and say, yeah, he's the front runner, because as of right now, there's only two guys who have been announced for second interviews, Ryan Poles obviously being the other. I will say, I don't know when this is running. There's a good chance that a couple more will leak out. Like, it's not a situation where they have to like sit there and announce to the world. They might still be scheduling stuff, especially with guys still in the playoffs. So I wouldn't be stunned if there's maybe a third or a fourth guy even. I don't think they go beyond that, but you know, again, coming into the process, Shane seemed like the favorite. Haven't heard anything to say, you know, went poorly. You always hear these things went well. So yeah, I would say that he looks like the favorite, but again, I'm, you know, not trying to like keep copying on. I'm not in the room, so I don't know that like maybe Ryan Poles comes in on Wednesday and blows them away and like, oh, you know what, he's actually might have been better. I don't, you know, I don't know that. So from the outside, again, hopefully informed speculation, he seems like the favorite, but 2 years ago, nobody, you know, on earth thought Joe Judge was the favorite to be the head coach, and boom, it was him. So tough to handicap these things because these are such small circles. You know, as much as we want to act like we're plugged in and stuff, like there isn't a lot of people who can be leaking what's going on if there's, you know, the two owners, the guy, you know, the candidate, and a lot of times that's about it. So you try and piece together breadcrumbs where you can, but it's not something that is typically bandied about until they kind of narrow it down to like a final decision.
So we've got confirmation of the Joe Shane and Ryan Poles second round in-person interviews. Do we know if we're getting Peters and Horitz in-person interviews or not yet?
Don't know yet. I mean, those are the two that if I was going to guess, one of those two or both of them would be kind of rounding out this finalist field. But yeah, we don't know. Like I said, that might be something where they, well, with Horitz, it wouldn't matter because they're not in the playoffs, but with Peters, maybe they're just trying to figure out the schedule. I don't know. Could just be these two guys. Who knows? You know, they had to, it's always like kind of weird talking about the Rooney Rule stuff, but like they had to bring a minority candidate in person. So like, even if they love Joe Shane, you know, more than anyone in the world, they have to bring Poles or another minority in. You know, you hope it's not like a token situation where we're just checking a box by that interview. But once he's in the door, they obviously can hire him, but they also can hire Shane. So nothing could happen until that. But nothing precludes them from, you know, interviewing another minority or a Peter, someone like that. So yeah, that kind of, I think we'll get some clarity on that on Wednesday. I don't think they'll drag it out because I think they're going to want to make a hire, you know, sooner than later.
So I have Ethan and I always say we have like a good finger on the pulse of the fan base. When you dropped your piece, well, first of all, prior to you dropping your piece, a lot of the fan base was really sort of not excited, but like they were like, okay, we're finally doing this the right way, and they probably still are. But when you dropped your piece, I had a lot of people sending me your article and parts of your article, like nothing is changing, blah 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 blah, and you know, it's still the same old Giants, and this is going to be the same. I don't think it's the same, and I don't think you think it's the same, but like, do you think that obviously John Mara is always going to be sort of the head honcho here? It's always going to be he's going to have the final say. And like he says, maybe 90, 95% of the time, he'll sign off on whatever the head coach and GM says. But do you think their goal right now is they're finally ready to tie a GM and a head coach together and allow the GM to properly conduct a head coaching search where he leads it and then ownership sort of just is playing Robin to the Batman? Yeah. not even signing the checks. They might have their concerns. I mean, it's the head coach. But do you think it's like, hey, the GM is going to be Batman, we're going to be Robin?
No, I want to start with that first part because, you know, this is a forum where we can kind of like open things up or peel back the curtain a little bit. So it's funny, like the timing of it, because in my mind's eye, like I was going to drop this piece, like if not the Monday after the season ended, like that Tuesday, like right after the season, like bam, just get it out there. But then both of my kids got COVID the last week of the season. And I mean, they're fine. So, you know, they had like basically a bad cold, but they were home from daycare. Like, I couldn't get like any work done that week. Like, I was trying as much as I could. And like the clock was ticking, but you also got to cover like all the mess that was going on with the judge's hot seat. And then like you have to cover like Gettleman's, you know, retirement, all that stuff. So I just like physically couldn't get the story done any faster. And like, obviously it's a big piece. So you got editors involved, and you know, I would have maybe gotten it out last week, but we did a big, huge, similar piece on the Bears kind of dysfunction that ran on Friday. So like, we'll spread them out a little bit. So like, there's a lot that goes in. Like, I think it's funny. Like, the reader thinks like, oh, it's so Machiavelli, and they like wanted to drop it right when we're gonna hire a GM. Like, no, I would have rather it's been a week. My biggest fear was like they hire a GM, like then I can't even run the piece because then it's like everyone's turning the page. I was like, I gotta get this out before they hire a GM. I mean, again, like, not because I'm trying to like blow up the franchise, but like you want something to be timely.
I mean, yeah, gotta be relevant.
Yeah, like, I mean, everyone, this piece is crap. Like, they've already moved on. But then, so that'll tie that back into your point. I think the GM field is very encouraging. I think the jury is still out on, does this change everything? Because, listen, they've changed GMs now twice. They've changed head coaches four times. Like, it's not as simple as, like, oh, they're just going to get the right GM in here. Like, listen, I think Dave Gettleman was, like, an abject failure. So I think
the worst general manager in the history of.
So by virtue of replacing him, they're going to upgrade that position significantly. But, like, again, everything else I covered in that story, like, doesn't just go away. Unless this GM, who's going to be a first-time GM, comes in and is like, nah, Tim McDonald, you know, your office is down the hall, and, like, you know, you're not invited to the meetings. That's not going to happen. Again, like I said earlier, maybe Chris is already kind of stepping back, so maybe that becomes less of a sort of an obstacle to work around. But no, I don't think it's a slam dunk that like, okay, they're just going to bring in a GM and magically fixes everything. I do think they're far better positioned than in 2017 when they, you know, it was a kind of a sham, like, oh, you know, let's get Dave back in here, the good old boy. And so definitely a better set situation as far as that. And then as far as the head coaching search, I mean, everything they're saying leads you to believe they're going to let the GM run the search. And I think they've shown either good discipline or good patience, because it has to be hard to see, like, you know, you hear these rumblings that they like Brian Flores, they like Dable. There's nothing stopping them from bringing those guys in from preliminary meeting. Cause listen, right, they're going to have to meet ownership either way. So like, get them in the door, or, you know, get them on a Zoom, whatever, get to know each other, get that part out of the way, let your interest be known, and then assume your GM, or you can, you know, you're obviously feeling out your GMs too. Like, who would they think of? You know, you kind of know who would be on their list. So there's nothing stopping them from doing that. As far as I know, the Bears and the Vikings are doing that. But I think they're playing it the right way by not doing that, by right, saying, all right, we're going to just totally let the GM run the search. Because listen, there's more than, you know, eight good head coaching candidates. None of us know which of the eight that get hired will be any good at all. You know, a lot of times the guys like Frank Reich who get hired last turn out to be the best of a, you know, a cycle. So I think they're doing everything right. It's like, again, like this story, I ideally would have run even a little sooner when it, like, things were absolutely at like peak mess. Yeah. You know, they've already started turning the corner, which is good. I mean, listen, I don't want to get that misconstrued either. Like, I don't want to keep covering teams that lose 10 plus games every year. So I hope they do get it right. But for selfish purposes of the story, you needed a little dysfunction to still be existing for it to make sense. Yeah. So But no, I will say in the 10 days, whatever it's been since the season ended, there are definitely positive signs that it's not just the quote unquote Giants way. They might be changing their stripe. So that's good. I mean, and again, you know, the proof will be in the pudding, but you know, it's all about process. I think their process is far more sound than it has been in past searches and past situations like this.
Two things. Number one, what gives me hope that they're doing it the right way is what you said. Like, they're not requesting any head coaching interviews. Like, Brian Flores, they probably do really like Brian Flores, but they're not requesting an interview. And even people that are putting stuff out, like the Giants, like this candidate or that candidate, if you actually read what they're writing, they're saying they like them. That coach is probably on John Mara's quote-unquote list, but they still want to wait for the GM. So that gives me hope that they're doing the right way. What will completely shatter everything for me will be what the new GM decides to do with Kevin Abrams and Chris Pettitte.
Okay.
If those two guys stay on board, even with like Kevin Abrams, like I can see, because at the end of the day, what does he do? Negotiate contracts? You know, like if Dave Gettleman told him, hey, I want you to go sign Kenny Golladay, like, you know, he just did his job. I mean, maybe he doesn't do it well, but I think the more damaging thing here is with Chris Pettitte, because a lot of these guys, as we talked about, are coming from scouting backgrounds. So if you get a guy like a Joe Shane who comes in and all of a sudden he's keeping Chris Pettitte on board, then I'm like, okay. Then I'm going back to, you know, Dan Duggan's piece. Like, okay, that, you know, like that's true. Do you think the new GM will have that sort of autonomy, as people say? Like, will he be able to build? Because I always said, even when Joe Judge was here, toward the end, I thought it was tough to bring him back. But I always said the most important thing for the Giants this offseason is they have to rebuild their front office.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you think like that? Because it seems like we hear is like they want somebody to come in and rebuild their whole scouting department. Does that include firing some people that might have prominent roles in the front office?
Yeah, so a lot to that. It's funny, I missed up my podcast, so I'm going to, you know, open it up here. Like, something you mentioned very early in that, which I want to touch on just again to try and peel back the curtain a little bit as far as, like, you know, knowing if Flores is interested in stuff. One thing that's important to know, there's, like, three agents who represent, like, 95% of the coaches and executives. You know, either you're a Bob Lamont guy, you're Jimmy Sexton guy, or you're Trace Armstrong guy. So, like, they're sitting down with Joe Shane, who's a Bob Lamont guy. So, like, pretty much every candidate is a Bob Lamont guy. So, again, it's very incestuous. It's very easy to figure out stuff like that, pass along interest. So, just to, like, kind of, again, like, allow a little peek in there. It's different than if there was, like, a million agents representing these guys. There's, like, three. And they must know everything that happens in the league, which is just, you know, a different story. Like, they just run the league. But, so that's just something I wanted to throw in there as you touched on it. But, no, I don't think the new GM is going to come in and fire Chris Mara and Tim McDonald. I think anyone expecting or hoping for that.
No. That's not happening.
That's a given.
So, yeah. So then your next point. Yeah, Kevin Abrams is a tougher one for me. Like, he's been, like, the good soldier. He's been here forever. You don't get the sense that he is influential in personnel stuff. I think he kind of, you know, came in as, like, the, you know, the math egghead guy, and it's been hard to shake that. It was going to be hard for him to shake that to become a GM. So I don't think he's trying to overrule any scouts. You know, the salary cap thing is tough for me too, because, like you said, like, is how much is him and how much is him just following directives? Like, if you tell me to go sign Kenny Golladay, I'm going to make the money work as best I can, but I can't, like, just give him $10 million or, you know, whatever. Like,
right.
You have to pay this much money. I'm just trying to make the numbers work. So I don't know. I mean, obviously, like, the cap was a mess this year, but I don't know. Maybe it's Kevin has a stronger voice and they listen, Dave, we can't pay Kyle Rudolph $14 million, you know? But, like, again, it's that's where the hierarchy comes in. Like, that's not really Kevin's call. So, hey, Kevin, Kyle Rudolph, Notre Dame guy, Tim McDonald, Notre Dame guy. I don't know that.
Not the first that's made that connection. Yeah.
Throw that out there for you. But anyways, but so that's my point with Kevin. It's like, again, going back even to the Chris Mara part, it's really hard to identify individual mistakes by individual members. That's why the GMs get fired, because, listen, you're getting the big paycheck. You're going to get all the blame. That's just how it works. But if Kevin sticks around as, like, the cap guy, I don't think that's the worst thing in the world. I mean, I think for him, he might be in, like, a Chris Mara 2007 situation where, like, he was all lined up to be the GM. Things went so haywire they couldn't possibly justify promoting him. He's probably got to be a little despondent to, like, what's my career looking like? Am I just going to be the assistant GM here, you know, for the rest of my life? Not the worst job in the world, he definitely has aspirations to be a GM. He's on that track, and now it's like I don't see how he gets back on that track. So, that's Kevin. I think Pettit is a very interesting one. I'll get back to him because you look at the rest of the scouting department, it's super young. Like that's one thing Dave Gettleman definitely did. He did wipe out a lot of those long timers, you know, who have certainly resurfaced on Twitter. People know who I'm referring to there. But even some other ones who've been quieter on Twitter, like there was guys who kind of came in with like Jerry Reese and Mark Ross, like the mid 2000s, who were there for like, you know, like it's 15 years. It's funny to think like, you know, I'm feeling old. Like that doesn't feel that long ago, 2007, but it's a long time ago. So guys have been there for a while, and they were moved out, or guys who were, you know, already in place when Jerry Reese took over, they've been moved out. So it's like their scouting staff might be one of the youngest in the league. Like they got like three or four scouts that are like in their 20s, like really, really young. So like, do you replace them with maybe some more experienced people? It's funny. They were saying, oh, you got to get younger. Maybe they went too young. I don't know. That's, you know, that's you know, evaluating area scouts is beyond my capabilities, yeah. Anybody. So obviously you would hope that people like Chris Pettit and Tim McDonald can tell the new GM, like, listen, we hired this guy to do the, you know, the Southeast, he can't hack it. Like, we got to get somebody else in there. That's where their role would be. Chris Pettit, I think, is going to be, like, the ultimate kind of barometer here. Because, right. Like, if you look objectively, he got promoted to his role in 2018. The 2018 and 2019 drafts are as bad as anything in the Jerry Reese, Mark Ross era. Like horrible when you consider how high they were picking, how many first-round picks they had. Like unbelievably bad. They've gotten a little better the last 2 years. You know, it's early 2020. Well, I shouldn't even say 2021. That jury's totally out. 2020, you know, Andrew Thomas, Xavier McKinney, like, looks like, you know, some pretty solid pieces there. But, man, like, if you're coming in and you're evaluating everybody from the clean slate, like, I don't know how you can sit there and say, well, Chris Pettit, really sharp, done a great job. Like, his, you know, his department's really been rolling. You just look at what the drafts have turned out. But, again, you know, he's known to be close with Tim McDonald. So this is where we get back to the whole point of my story. It's like, do you fire the owner's, you know, buddy? Like, that's a bold first move. And I don't think Tim McDonald slams on the desk of Joe Shane or whoever and say, you will not fire Chris Pettit. But this guy's going to come in and read the room. He's gonna be connected to people who, hey, listen, you know, Chris Pettit, friend of Tim. Maybe I'll give him a draft to see how it goes. You know what I mean? Like, that'll be very telling. If he comes in and on day one fires Chris Pettit the same way Dave Gettleman fired Mark Ross, you'll say, oh, wow, like, they mean business. Because it's not even just, like, Mark Ross obviously was getting fired. Chris Pettit has a very well-connected friend in that building. So if he gets fired, that'll make me stand up and take notice. Like, wow, they're not messing around. And I'm not saying, like, I'm not advocating for Chris Pettit to get fired.
Absolutely not.
Care one way or the other. It's just objectively, you look at the job he's done, it's hard to defend it. And the fact that if he stays, there'll be that kind of cloud of, is he staying because, you know, the new GM thinks he's really good, or is he staying because he's friends with Tim McDonald?
Yeah,
that's the first test for me.
of the candidates that have been interviewed, who is your favorite? I think, like what I said, we have a pretty good finger on the pulse of the Giants fan base, and I would say from what I've seen that Adam Peters is probably leader in the clubhouse, followed by a 2A, 2B of Shane and Horitz. But if you were John Mara.
Ortiz.
Yeah, I butchered that.
It's too. Ortiz?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, all right. Well, I'm known for mispronouncing names anyway, so I might as well stay on brand.
You threw me off. I just garbled it earlier. Like, wait, what is it? So I just, like, just the horror and mumbled something I couldn't remember either.
All right, who's your pick?
I'm most intrigued by Ortiz just because, like, that Baltimore front office has been, like, awesome for – he's been there for 24 years, and, like, so he's learned under Ozzie Newsome and Ed Acosta, and, like, they just kind of kill the draft, kill the comp free agent game, a good example of how shrewd they are. The Giants cut an offensive lineman because he's, you know, too high in the cap. The Ravens swoop in, sign him to a very affordable deal, and he's a productive member of a – you know, they would have been a playoff team, obviously, if Lamar didn't get hurt, but obviously I'm talking about Zeitler. It's, like, just two organizations working on opposite tracks. The Giants are like trading for Zeitler, taking on the huge cap hit. The Ravens are scooping guys like that up and giving them like a very reasonable deal. You know, again, I preface everything. I don't know what the Giants front office members are doing. I certainly don't know what his exact role is in every transaction, but that's why you're definitely drawn to guys who have been in winning organizations, exposed to a certain way of doing business. I can't imagine he would come in here and do something totally different than what they do in Baltimore. Maybe he can't replicate it, but I think you're at least getting off from a good jumping off from a good point. But no, I think yeah, I don't think any of these names are crazy. I think Shane and Peters are the two other guys who seem like they have the most impressive resumes, kind of been around, you hear nothing but good things, kind of like a little bit of a well-rounded background, came up with kind of like got some a little more diversity, whereas Ortiz was just the Ravens. I think maybe you like that these other guys have been exposed to different things. But I think any of those three, and you hear a lot of good things about Poles. He's a little younger, a little less experienced, obviously just been with the Chiefs, but he's been through a couple different regimes there, so he's been exposed to different things. I think any of those three or four guys would be strong hires. I mean, obviously, we won't have any way of rendering a verdict until they fire Chris Pettit. No, I'm just kidding. For a while. It's
no, that is true. That is true.
It'll be funny. Like this GM, they'll be celebrated on their first day, and then if Pettit's still there, you know, at the Senior Bowl, everyone will want him out. But, yeah, it's going to take a while to evaluate a GM, but I think I don't think they could go wrong. I mean, it'd be kind of crazy if they like hired Adrian Wilson, because I mean, I think he's a little green, but you know, it's a good list. So, I mean, I think that, those three guys probably stand out the most to me. And like I said, I probably lean to Ortiz just because I really would want a piece of what Baltimore has done, but I don't know that he's like a better leader or administrator than Joe Shane. How could I know that, you know?
I think that's the appeal of Shane, right? The whole administrator piece, where if you actually have to rebuild the front office, he seems to have the most experience out of everyone else in doing that, whereas the others are incredibly high-regarded talent scouts, as is Shane, but more so on the admin side.
I think that's a big part of it, because like, it's the GM job is not just, you know, sitting in your office with your Wii remote watching film. Like, there's a lot more there's a lot more that goes into it. So I think that's, it's weird that like it's so fixated on like, oh, what's your scouting record? It's like, well, you're gonna have to hire really good people, because like you're not gonna be at the Alabama practice on a Monday in November. So like you need to get good people in the building. You need to have a really good process. That's one thing that with Gettleman I heard, like he revamped the whole like scouting system, which probably needed a revamping. Don't get me wrong, because like what George Young did in like 1979 maybe doesn't apply. Maybe it did need to be updated. But from what Gettleman did, I heard it just was like a disaster, and it just didn't work, especially with young scouts, because you kind of needed to draw on your experience. It was like a terrible mix of like, it's too long-winded for me to explain here. I know Tyler Dunn really got into it in his piece. I just felt like there's only so much you can fit in the story. But bottom line, I heard that was a mess. So like, you need to have a good system. You need to have your scouts knowing exactly what you're looking for, your head coach is looking for, everyone is looking for. I feel like they did not have that. So yeah, like the idea of like, in my GM, uncover like a sixth round hidden gem, like I don't know that that's really the job. I mean, it's nice, but that's where your scouts and everyone you hire and everyone who you lead have to be able to do that. So I don't think that falls on the GM as much as like that's how you get to that position. But then you get to that position, it's like, oh wait, this isn't the job at all anymore. It's kind of like a coach. Like you can be the greatest X's and O's coordinator, you're the head coach, you got to deal with like arrests and schedules and all sorts of other crap.
Yeah,
like you don't have to deal with that. So it's the same type of, like, your whole world gets changed when you move up in both of those roles. So that's where these interviews are crucial, because, yeah, you can look at, like, the Ravens draft record, but, like, how can Joe Ortiz, like, organize and run and do all of the administrative stuff? Because, I mean, it's definitely a lot of that falls on the GM's plate.
Fair enough. Yeah. Weiss, do you have any other questions, or do you want to get to listener questions?
I have no more questions for Dan.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, we've pretty much hit on everything with him.
It's
too early to talk about head coaches right now because
they're doing it the right way. All right. Well, the first question that came in that I actually really like is from Will. Here it is. All right. So if Judge knew he might not be back next year, do you think he would have objected more strongly to Gettleman returning last year?
So when you say Will, you mean this answer is going to be like clipped and like thrown back in my face like 4 years from now?
Yes.
That's who you're talking about, Will.
Yes.
Okay.
Thankfully, this answer is not so much, you know, an old takes exposed type of answer.
Gotcha.
More of an opinion, so to say.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, listen, I wrote this last week. Bringing Gettleman back was not the right move, and I definitely think if Judge had more of a say, he would not have come back. I think John Mara made a crucial like misjudgment where he's like, oh, we went 5-3, things seem to be going well, like everything must be good down there. And like just from talking to people, like it was not going good down there. Like they you know, they got along when Joe got hired. Of course, you're going to get along those kind of honeymoon phase, but they just weren't on the same page. I mean, like, I people are like, oh, give me an example. And it's just hard on these things. So, like, again, there's not usually, like, you know, big fights and stuff, but it's just like little things day to day. But a good example of it was, you know, they signed Ofeti Odenigbo. Right. Which I thought I'd never pronounce that name ever again. Yeah. And it's like, he's a 4-3 DN. Like, they need a pass rush help. He's a 4-3 DN who's, you know, had like a season where he had like 7 sacks. He does not fit what Patrick Graham wants to do on defense at all. Like, it wasn't a $50 million signing, but it was a $2.5 million signing with $1 million guaranteed. Got out there on the field in training camp, was like third string, never moved up, just never was going to fit, never was not what the coaching staff was looking for out of that position. They would rather have, like, Trent Harris, who can, like, drop in coverage and do these different things. And so they cut him, and they just ate $1 million. And earlier we were talking about how bad their cap situation is. Those types of moves add up. And now, listen, there are definitely bigger examples, I'm sure, and I know a few. I'm trying to be kind of careful here, but I would just say, yes, to answer Will's question, if Joe Judge could do things differently, I'm sure he would have more strenuously objected to Dave Gettleman being back. I think that process, I'll have to do some more maybe reporting on that. So I just think the end of last season was poorly handled due to a lack of communication is how I'll leave it, somewhat opaquely. I'm sorry for that.
I think the state of the NFC East at that last year really also played a big role. They feel like if they were eliminated, I don't think that 5-3 finish would have played as big of a role as it did. But yeah, I agree. You got another one, Ethan, for him?
I'm looking. There's some good ones. This is from Mike. Who do you think the Giants' starting quarterback is in 2022?
Ooh.
Oof, that is a good one.
There you go.
Like, I think this new GM is going to have some big decisions, like, right out of the gate. Like, it's kind of fun. Like, it's like, you don't just coming in and, like, all right, you got to tear it down. You got to do this. Like, they have a few different ways they can go. Like, personally, where I'm at with this, I don't think they're going to trade for Russell Wilson. I don't think they're going to trade for Deshaun Watson. I don't know enough, but you never really heard that, like, from the past regime, they were really going to go for quarterback. So we don't know. Maybe Joe Shane just loves Kenny Pickett. How could any of us possibly know that? Like, but let's just say they don't draft a quarterback, because I think that's the other option. I think it just makes sense to, if you're going to do like a stopgap type year, just let Daniel Jones be your stopgap. Don't like trade him, or obviously you're not going to cut him, but don't like trade him for a mid-round pick and then go spend $10 million on like Teddy Bridgewater. That makes no sense to me. Like, at least Daniel Jones, who I have not been the biggest proponent of, has a chance to have some upside. You know, he's still young. We still haven't fixed the O-line, all the things that people have been saying now for years. I'm not thinking Daniel Jones will ever become like a top 10 quarterback, but if I'm going to just kind of go through a year and feel it out, I'd rather go with a guy who has potential at least than just getting some veteran to plug in there. And like I said, I don't think there's another great option. Like, I don't think they're going to make a blockbuster trade. And if they're going to draft one, they might as well just blow the whole thing up, you know, start selling off the veterans, do all that type of thing. That's really going to be the biggest decision this GM has to make. And you have to hope he doesn't do the Gettleman trying to like do both. Like, are you going to just blow it up? Or are you saying like, listen, we have a good team. We did, you know, no one wants to have injuries, but we had a lot of injuries. Like, they were building thinking they were going to be like a 500 or better team last year. If I can nail these draft picks, find some pieces for a line, we can be a contender next year. I don't know if that's right or wrong, but I think that's the one lane to take. The other lane is to say like, no, man, like this is bad, getting worse. Let's just blow it up, get out of these contracts and start from scratch. It'll be fascinating to see which lane they choose. So I think both have, you know, kind of pros and cons.
What about Saquon Barkley?
I think that's an easier call. I think you have to just ride it out with him. Like, I mean, really? What are you gonna trade him? Trade him for like, what are you getting for him in the trade? Let's just say like a third round pick. Like,
hell yeah, baby.
Well, you need salary cap space.
Yeah,
they're gonna have to free up cap space. That's the true. Thing
I mean, again, that's where it comes down. If you're blowing it up, then absolutely trade him. Get that $7 million. But like, so you're gonna trade him. He's still like, I was very opposed to the number 2 pick. I don't think he's been the same guy. The injuries, blah blah blah. Like, you're trading him at his lowest value.
Yeah.
Like, I don't hate the idea of just like it's almost like if I'm the GM, I come in and it's like I got these big decisions. I can kind of just put him off till next offseason, have like a full year to evaluate. Like, because like Daniel Jones, I'll let him play out this last year. I'm not touching his 5th year option. Saquon, I'll let him play out this year. I'm not re-signing him. But like, you have a chance to at least have some success your first year. I don't know. It's definitely a hard decision. Like, I threw out 3rd round pick. I haven't done any research. Maybe a 5th round pick. I mean, like, I don't know where your floor is because you jumped at a 3rd. I don't know. I don't know what his value would be, because whoever trades for him is not just saying, oh, yeah, great, we have Saquon for 1 year. It's like, you're going to inherit the, well, what's he going to want for a contract? That you just do a 1-year rental for him? Like, I don't, you know, that gets complicated. So I think it's like maybe the easiest kind of path of least resistance is just like, let's just ride it out and address that you know, he has 2,000 yards. We have maybe have a decision in our hands. He has another season like this, then obviously we don't have a decision in our hands. We just, you know, wash our hands and move on. But I think you just kind of ride it out with both of those guys, which I know isn't very, like, inspiring or exciting. But, like, until I kind of hear or see better options, I kind of think that's the corner they're backed into a little bit.
I got a question for you, Dan. This, I've had this debate with a lot of people over the course of the last week since the Giants sort of cleaned house. When you look at all the openings right now, Minnesota, Chicago, and the Giants, and even the Raiders too right now, for a GM candidate, experienced, non-experienced, whatever, would you say that the Giants' job is more sort of enticing because you sort of had that, you sort of have that clean slate where there's no Justin Fields you got to tie your hip to. There's no Kirk Cousins who's getting paid a lot of money. There's no dilemma with the Raiders like they have, you know, in terms of a roster that needs a lot of work and a quarterback that could be disgruntled that you have to make a tough decision on. In the case of Chicago, we talked about Justin Fields. Do you think that the Giants is more enticing than those other three? Or is it, you know, a GM candidate, experienced or non-experienced, is sort of saying, hey, I would rather have at least a young quarterback or an experienced quarterback in place?
That's a good question. All the situations are very different. I'll be honest, I haven't really, like, dove that deeply in. I have to, like, look at contracts and what the cap space is. I think Minnesota doesn't have very much cap space. I think the Bears might have decent cap space.
They don't have a first-round pick, yeah.
Yeah, that's true. That's very true. It depends on what you think of Justin Fields. Like, I don't know. I mean, I think, you know, this is, like, such a cop-out answer, but I just wasn't prepared for that question. So it's
a good question, right, though? You got to give me that.
It is. And, like, obviously, if you're Joe Shane, who has a different couple of options, you're going to have to make that call. I mean, I think you know, the Giants, as bad as this organization has been, as you might have read recently, it is still looked at as a very strong organization. Like, you know, one of the criticisms is, like, you know, hasn't been necessarily the case with the head coach lately, but they're too loyal. Like, they tend to give people a chance. I would think the next head coach is going to get a little bit of time here. They don't want to keep doing this. And also, like, there's something to be said for, as bad as it has been lately, they have proven that they can get to, you know, the mountaintop. There's plenty of franchises that have not proven that. You know, I can't, when's the last time the Vikings were in the Super Bowl? I mean, I can't even think of it off the top of my head. So there's just situations like that where the Giants, I think, still have a appeal. Like, I don't know that you're making you're choosing where you're going to become the GM based on, like, the 2022 cap. You know what I mean? Like,
Exactly.
It's a much bigger scope, I think, that goes into that decision. Like, you might say, oh, I don't really love Daniel Jones, but, like, that might not be your problem in a year. So I don't know that is, like, going to be a driving force in the decision.
That's why I think clean slate is always more enticing, because you can essentially just build it from the ground up. Whereas you go to a place like Chicago, hey, man, we got this rookie quarterback, Justin Fields, you're going to have to work with. You go to Minnesota, it's like, hey, we got Cousins for at least the next couple years. Raiders, hey, man, the first big decision you got to make as a first-time GM or as whatever is you got to, you know, decide what you want to do with Derek Carr. So – that was a good question. I wanted to run it by you.
It was a good question.
So I put you on the spot. Ethan, you got anything else for the great Dan Duggan?
A lot of these are compliments. Ask him why he's the only beat reporter with any balls. Tell him he's the GOAT. A lot of compliments. And hey, that's why we love you. We love having you on.
always welcomed.
Yeah. I mean, Weiss, unless you have any questions that I'm missing.
I had that one question for Dan. I thought it was a great question. Dan thought it was a great question.
You want me to pat you on the back so you don't have to keep patting yourself on the back? Why? That's a great question.
I was like, when he sent the DM to Dan this morning, I was like, okay, I'm going to ask him that question, because I've had that discussion with a lot of people over the course of the last.
I guess we'll get our answer. Like, I think Shane he's got a couple interviews, so maybe whoever he chooses will answer that for you. Because I don't know. I haven't given that enough thought in terms of, like, kind of like really sizing them up, like, side by side. But again, if you're about to make a life-changing decision like these guys are, you would have done that. So yeah, Shane has had Giants and Bears. So he'll choose between those two. So Monty Osborne had all three, so he would be a guy who would be a good one to pull on that. But yeah, that's a good question.
There you go. All right, should we wrap it up? All right, let's do it. Follow us on Twitter. Follow me at EthanGSN. Follow Weiss at NYG Daily. Follow Dugs at DDuggan21. Subscribe to The Athletic. You can subscribe to our podcasts. We're everywhere: iTunes, Audioboom, Google Play, Stitch Radio, Spotify. Subscribe, unsubscribe, resubscribe. Rate us 5 stars. Leave us a kind review. Dan, thank you for coming on.
Thanks, Dan.
Talk to everyone else soon.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.